the Supreme Court decision, Graham versus Connor, set the rules for evaluating use of force cases today. And in those cases, the court used the totality of circumstances standard. And totality of circumstances sounds like it's a way in which you would look at everything. But the reality is it's a very deferential standard to law enforcement, and it requires courts to evaluate things using an objective reasonableness standard from the perspective of the reasonable officer rather than using any 20/20 vision of hindsight. And in this case, the defendant was very smart in seeking a bench trial. Had he gone to a jury, it's possible in the climate today that the jury would have ruled against him. But by going to a bench trial, it's placing the case entirely in the hands of the judge. And the judges are deeply rooted in these standards in the deferential standards of totality of circumstances. And so it sort of favored him. It was very, it didn't help the prosecution.
The young man who was killed, 24-year-old Anthony Lamar Smith, was allegedly participating in a drug sale, selling drugs, and then proceeded to flee from the police. However, in the police recording inside the police vehicle, the officer says something to the effect that, "I'm going to kill this person.
I believe there
Don't
was an
you know
expletive,
it? Don't right? you know it?" And there was and there was an expletive there. What weight do you put on something like that? And then the officer does shoot the individual.
It tells me how weak the legal standard is. That where the defendant still wins in that scenario, police are rarely brought up in these charges. There's about 1,000. Cases a year, and I think under 100 in the last decade have actually gone to trial. In some ways, it really just sort of demonstrates clearly of how weak Chief Justice Rehnquist's standard from Graham versus Connor is. It fits wholeheartedly into what I call the jurisprudence of crime control, whereas, you know, we're going to give all benefits of the doubt to the police officer. We're going to give everything possible to the police officer, and it makes it very hard for there to be justice served.
In some of these cases, for example, there was a case up in Chicago a few years ago where someone is shot 16 times. In this case, in St. Louis, the individual was shot 5 times. What does that say when there's so many bullets fired against a person where one probably would have done the job?
It's not the way they're trained. They're trained to respond until the person's no longer posing a threat. And part of the problem here is training. And the training has been, again, it fits into the law in terms of the mentality that we have.
And I should also say that the suspect had a gun, according to police. And so that makes a difference.
Yes.
St. Louis, as we know, has erupted into protests. Some of them have been peaceful. Some of them have been not so peaceful. It's devolved into rock throwing and vandalism. But the thing you hear over and over from citizens, particularly in the minority community, is that the system is broken. What do you think about that?
I think there's ample evidence to suggest that the system in St. Louis County is broken. I don't think there's any real doubt about that. I'm not at all convinced that the protests this weekend are going to help the case. You know, boycotts are aimed at economic disruption. That makes sense. You know, the idea, you know, even think about the civil rights movement. You know, the Montgomery bus boycott was, let's hurt the city so that they'll desegregate the buses. The problem is there doesn't seem to be an ability to control the nonviolent, peaceful protests during the day. And as soon as the sun goes down, bricks start getting thrown. And, you know,
is it two different groups of people in your view? I mean, the daytime people seem to be Black Lives Matter and concerned citizens. And then at night, others come out.
You know, I'm reading conflicting stories on that. I'm reading that it's some of the same people. It's hard to say. I don't know that the cancellation of the U2 concert this weekend, which definitely caused a lot of economic disruption, is that going to help gain support from the probably 50, 60,000 people who are going to that concert?
Well, this is a narrative that is becoming increasingly familiar. There have been cases of police officers being acquitted in Oklahoma, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Ohio. And of course, we all know about the incident in Ferguson that happened just a few miles away from this incident. What has to happen now? This is becoming a very common occurrence.
I kind of think we were almost making some progress on these issues before the 2016 election, and then since then everything has shifted to the broader resistance movements and stuff, and it's sort of lost its traction, it's lost its hold because there's so many things that people are complaining about. I mean, what has to happen is there has to be widespread support for reform. And again, I think to get widespread, you've got to find a way to reach across just those activists. You've got to find a way to get others to say, yes, enough of this. Enough is enough. Yet, I don't know. I'm not certain when you wake up in the morning in St. Louis and you see there were 80 arrests last night and you see that 11 police officers have been injured, I don't think that's going to be gaining the traction. The civil rights movement, you know, the protesters, they were nonviolent all the time. They were, violence was inflicted upon them, and they use that to their advantage. But the problem is it's the opposite right now.
Well, what do you suggest? Some sort of national dialogue that has to take place? Does it have to come from the Trump administration down or the Justice Department down?
Given this administration, given the Attorney General's position and the law and order positions of the President of the United States, a national dialogue is unlikely. It's not going to come from the White House. It has to come from somewhere else.
Where?
That's the fundamental challenge that we're facing right now, is where.
Well, you're painting a pretty bleak picture here about police-community relations.
Well, and it's not police community relations everywhere. You know, certainly you have a place where you're dealing with a county, a part of the country which has had notoriously bad problems. The question is how do you build political support within the state of Missouri to move the issue when, you know, even, you know, when you no longer have the Department of Justice even saying, okay, he got acquitted, but we're going to go after him with civil rights violations. They say no, you know. And so, yeah, is it bleak? Yes, but there's a lot of things that are challenging right now.
The city paid out $800,000 in a settlement, a wrongful death settlement, to the family of Mr. Smith. Are there any other legal appeals that the family can take at this point, given the acquittal?
No, because an acquittal is an acquittal. Once you're acquitted, you can never be recharged, retried. And the only other option was a federal civil rights case, in Section 1983 case, and the Department of Justice said they're not pursuing that.
You study criminal justice. You're an expert in that area. If you had the ear of the people in St. Louis, both on the ground and in government, what advice would you give them?
I would probably say something that's not particularly new, but the idea we need to reevaluate what's going on in this community. We need to figure out what's causing this. And one of the ways to do that is to be looking at questions of, you know, how are we training our officers? What's the culture that's been created? On the other hand, there are the broader socioeconomic issues that just changing the police isn't going to solve. You know, where you have poverty and you have crime, and so how do you grapple with that?
Michael Gizzi is a professor of criminal justice at Illinois State University. Thanks for coming in and talking.
Thank you.
I'm Judy Valente.